Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey, sports fans, Coach Nick here, and welcome to another edition of the B-Ball Breakdown live show coming at you on a Monday early afternoon, late morning, depending on where you are. As always, I'm joined by Andrew Combo Sal to discuss the latest and greatest in the NBA. Great to see everybody out here ready to go, and we really want some of your questions. Don't forget, if you want us to answer them on the screen with a nice lot of love and hype for you, the super chat function on the YouTube side would be the best way to do that. So, Combo, what's happening, my man?
Earthquakes, eclipses.
Earthquakes? Where's an earthquake?
In New York. We had an earthquake.
I totally missed that. Did you feel it?
Yeah. I was here working at Combo's court.
And wow. When did this happen?
The whole building started shaking. It was crazy.
When?
Last week, I would say Friday, if I'm not mistaken.
You mean to tell me you had an earthquake in New York City? Do you know what the number was for the Richter?
I don't know the number. And then later in the day, I was playing basketball, and supposedly there was another one, but I didn't feel that, maybe because I was hooping.
Wow. I mean, this one, it looks like it was on April 5th, a 4.8. From an LA perspective, it's, a little bit of a hello from Mother Earth, but,
yeah, we don't get those a lot over here on this side.
Yeah. That is not insignificant. And I certainly have, when I felt those, was it the rocking back and forth, or was it rough and up and down shaking?
Yeah. Up and down shaking. I didn't know what was going on. I was like, wait, is my building falling down?
That's got to be pretty scary. I mean,
it's weird. I wasn't scared. I don't know. I felt like meditative.
Yeah. Well, especially because it's the entire world, as you know, it is moving and you can do nothing about it.
Yeah.
It's kind of awe inspiring in that way. So, yes. Wow. Yes.
Would you consider that sublime?
No.
Oh, okay.
Sublime would not be the word I would use for that. Awe inspiring is good, or just sort of, but the meditative notion I think is good too. There is some sort of notion where you kind of get into that state. But I certainly could think of people panicking as well. So luckily everything's okay. Nothing broke in your house, I take it?
No, nothing broke. Almost pretty good.
Didn't fall off the wall.
No. And, J. Cole dissed, Kendrick Lamar, and then he apologized. How do you feel about that?
It's always good when you apologize. It's we can all get along.
Okay.
We got to talk about the death of rock and roll. Oh, that's the wrong pod, but at some point, maybe I'm going to throw this out there. I think we've witnessed the death of rock and roll without even realizing it. I know it's just off of your, we're talking about cultural stuff that maybe you're not in tune with it, but
I figured it was dead already for years. I don't know.
I mean, it has, I think we did. I'm only now kind of realizing all of a sudden there are no rock and roll bands in their prime that are like big and, arena rock kind of stuff like we used to have. And it hasn't been that way for probably 20 years since like Coldplay. So if anybody in the comments, somebody else, that you could come up with that's captured the imagination of the United States, even, then let me know. But I think, drummer, bass, lead guitar, singer, like that lineup kind of thing. I guess we're not interested anymore in that or something, or no one's come along to capture our imaginations.
It took you 20 years to realize that, Coach Nick?
Yeah. Well, have you heard anybody else say that rock and roll is dead to you in the last 10 years?
I mean, there was this thing that was going on saying hip hop was dead. And, I think Nas had a song called Hip Hop is Dead. And that was going on for a little bit, but I think it's alive and well now. I'd say country music is back because of Beyonce.
Okay. I mean, Taylor Swift is a little bit country too, I suppose.
Yeah, she just dropped the whole country album.
All right. Well, let's get into the NBA. We're moving towards the playoffs, believe it or not. It's coming up in about a week. The play-in tournament, I think it's the 16th through the 19th, something like that. And we got to look at this. I actually tweeted it out yesterday. I was kind of wondering what your thoughts were. So what does it say about the East that the Bucks can go, I believe it's 15 and 17 under Doc, and still be second in the East after all that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really interesting. It shows where the West and the East is. It's interesting on the other side that the Lakers are 21 and 9 over the last 30, and they're still in the position that they're in.
So I just did the video about LeBron being a coach or not. If you haven't seen it, you should please go watch it. It's doing really well, but, you know, I can always use more views. And here's what I came up with at the very end. I kind of buried the lead. I probably shouldn't take a little chunk out of this and put it on Twitter. But if you look at the minutes played for the first two-thirds of the season, where the, you know, Lakers were struggling and everyone was up in arms, you could tell that Darvin Ham was clearly monitoring minutes for most of the top guys. And over the last, I want to say, 13 games, they've won 10 of them, something like that. They're 10-3. You look at their minutes, and all of a sudden, the top six, seven guys are playing playoff minutes, and they're winning a lot of these games. So maybe there's some mastermind thing going on here that, you know, they could just stay away from Denver until the conference finals. Then they are in good position. Now, the question is, can they do that? Let's call up the standings real quick and give me an idea of what you think about where the Lakers might fall or get into what seeding they'll get. What do you think?
It's interesting because a friend actually told me he thought it would be best if the Lakers played Denver early when LeBron is fully charged instead of a tired LeBron later on.
Fascinating. Fascinating. That's interesting. I don't know. I mean, the typical mindset would be you want to delay that as long as possible, but man, that's interesting. Get the most powerful version of LeBron is in early in the playoffs. Because of his age, right? He's going to get worse as time goes on in the playoffs.
Yeah. Also, other guys can get healthier too, as time goes on. I guess that helps too, right? Like Jared Vanderbilt's not around. They're missing some guys right now that could really help them.
I'm fascinated by all of that. And Gabe Vincent is now back slowly but surely. Yep. You know, not huge impact box score wise, but like I had thought that he would be a real important piece for them for a lot of reasons. And certainly defensively, he's been showing that.
You know who's been huge for them this season that's going under the radar? Rui.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny. Here's the problem. Just so you're prepared, Lakers fans, I hinted at it in the video as well. They're going to target him mercilessly, and it's going to be a question of whether he can stay on the floor because of his defense.
It's interesting because he was getting those Kawhi comparisons, and it's interesting he's the guy that's going to be targeted.
Kawhi comparisons defensively?
In general, as a player, when he was younger.
Oh, yeah, okay, maybe, yeah. Well, yeah. It's not there anymore. He doesn't have instincts like that. He doesn't what they're trying to – like, they had him guarding James Harden quite a bit against the Clippers in the video I was focusing on. This is now, like, you know, end of February, early March, a little while ago. But part of me thinks it's like he's probably better on the ball versus getting lost in the weak side and stuff. So they figured, let's put him, you know, let's have him be the, you know, the head of the attack. And his length, he's got length, right? But he doesn't have any instincts. He's not a playmaker on the defensive end. And so I would just anticipate that. Now, is it possible he can hold his own? Yeah, maybe. But just watch for them to be other teams to be forcing switches, get Jury onto the ball. And I'm sorry, listen, I really like Rui. Like, go watch some of my older videos when he's been popped up in them. I've always liked him since Gonzaga. So, I apologize, Mo, if Japanese country will not allow me in their country now. But I just think that, you know, it's a natural occurrence. This is how the playoffs work, right? We do target people on defense.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the NBA is all about. Some might call it ball movement, which it is, but it's really just trying to find the guy who has the worst matchup when it comes to the playoffs. And that's where a lot of the ball movement today comes from.
And I got an interesting take is if you want to, you know, hold your fist up on top and dribble the ball 10 times until the matchup comes up to screen so you can force a switch. Well, the other team is going to be somewhat prepared for that. 100%. Versus understanding how to have motion into your offense and then set a screen that then forces a switch. And now you've got separation, you've got movement in there. That, in my mind, allows you to target those kind of players infinitely better. And like I was teaching some of the kids I was working with on Saturday, you know, the team that gets the more higher quality looks wins.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, listen, there are individual games where a team can get hot and hit some, you know, tough shots and they, you know, they tip their cap and they win. But overall, generally, if you're going to get more higher quality shots than the other team, you're going to win those games. So that's the question here with Rui is, can he stay on the floor defensively? But certainly he gives them another dimension of scoring that they need, that they could use. So it's interesting. So the question here is, let's get back to the question about the standings right now. the Lakers are in ninth place, 9.5 games behind the Timberwolves. However, they're only a half game behind Sacramento. They're only a game and a half behind the Pelicans and a game and a half behind the Suns. They're all bunched up in that area. The Mavericks, I think, are pretty much set with that fifth seed. They're not going to drop. They're not going to move up either. So, and I don't think the Clippers aren't going to move either. So we have a Clippers-Mavericks first round playoff series. I'm pretty sure that's going to be locked in. Really quickly, how do you feel about that?
Which one?
Clippers-Mavericks.
I think the Mavericks will beat them. The Mavericks look like the most dangerous team in the NBA, and Luka and Kyrie are in an absolute bender. And obviously those trade deadline moves were great, fit them well. I mean, the issue with them is always, is there enough defense to win it all? And is there enough offensively around Kai and Luka? But I think this is the best team that has ever been assembled around Luka.
Absolutely. And those midseason trades they made for PJ Washington and Gafford, I mean, really, really good. Even like on paper, before you could even see it, you felt like, okay, they're getting some really great athleticism in the front court. Guys that can make defensive plays, guys that can shoot a little bit, at least PJ can shoot a little bit. And, you know, you can finally stop relying on guys like Kleba, who I like him, but he can't be like a starter for you on a conference finals team. It's just, exactly. You're just having to do too much to cover him up. So now they can give Kleba 10 minutes, right? He can hit a couple threes, face the floor. You know, that'll work for him a lot better. It's remarkable, right? How much better teams can play, or how much better players can play when they get slotted in the right, you know, ideal role for them. Like, for instance, Tim Hardaway Jr., I like him too, but you can't play him more than about 18 minutes in the game, right? If you play him 18 minutes, you're going to ultimately get like some of the really good stuff he can do. He can knock down shots. He can put the ball on the floor a little bit, but if you get him beyond that realm, he starts doing things he doesn't do well, and it just torpedoes everything.
Yeah, he seems like the X factor, but if you ask Mavs fans and Mavs analysts, they'll tell you they'd rather him not play at all, which is interesting. And I think he's like their third best shot maker, right? So like, I didn't understand that from the Mavs perspective, but just talking to that fan base a little bit, that's what I gathered.
You know, he is until he's not. And so, you know, I'm going to go back. Let's look at the last 15 games for him. I'm curious what his minutes are. So right now, if you're doing the minutes breakdown, in the last 15 games, Hardaway is at, 21.6 minutes. But by the way, I didn't know that before I looked it up. So when I said, what did I say, 20 minutes? Or I said 18 minutes. That they're figuring this out. You know, it's kind of like with Russ as well on the Clippers, right? When they finally got Russ down to 20 minutes a game, and you were getting like, you know, the best version of Russ. Although, man, I there's some doozies out there, man, when you watch Russ play now, even that that are just
With Westbrook, I mean, the Clippers struggled without him, right? This year, after the All-Star break.
I guess the Clippers are an interesting thing, maybe worth a video as well, because it seems like there's like disharmony going on there. Kawhi Leonard, obviously, they have a real, really concerning injury issue with his knee.
No, I don't have any insight, but they were struggling before that. Bad, real bad.
Yeah, well then, but I also feel like, you know, Paul George, like they were struggling a little bit with getting those guys playing together. Oh no, actually, wait a minute. Am I correct in saying that they were bad when they had all three going? I think so.
Yeah, they were bad. Just Russ wasn't playing.
You know what? I think I might have been when I was traveling and I missed a little bit of that storyline. So their storyline was going that they had Harden, PG, and Kawhi going. They were playing badly, but Russ wasn't playing, and that's why.
Yeah, no, I don't think that everybody thought Westbrook was the reason, but he definitely was the guy that wasn't playing during that time.
I mean, that's a fact. You're right.
Yeah.
Let me just see if I can find.
Which is kind of unfair because, to be honest, I mean, I know our analysis is usually fair, Westbrook, but I mean, I think that could be pointed out, right? If the team is playing terrible and he happens to be the guy that's not there anymore when they start playing terrible. But I also think part of it was Harden just wasn't as good after the All-Star break. I don't know what happened after the All-Star break. Like, he fell off a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you get distracted on the All-Star break that weekend and then start to get back sometimes at that age. You know, at their height, though, the Clippers are a very, very tough team. They've got everything they need. And I'm trying to, I guess I can't find my typical Kawhi Leonard. Where's my news about Kawhi Leonard? Here we go. He will sit out Sunday's matchup with the Cavaliers. This is old. This is from yesterday. You know, he's missed four straight games. And I don't know. You always got to be worried with Kawhi and his knee. You know, if it's really bad, he'll probably give it a go. And then he could get banged up in the first game of the playoffs. And then you're back to, you know, a team that's flawed. So, right. So the bottom line is, if the Clippers are fully healthy, even, you know, I think that they have a legit shot at beating almost anybody. I just don't think that anybody's going to beat the Nuggets. I think we've already said that way too many times, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, fully healthy, nobody's beating the Nuggets, in my opinion. It's funny to think about who is the team with the best chance to beat them, though. I guess most would say the Celtics, but I don't even see them beating the Nuggets either. That's if they both make the finals.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you would want to have somebody big enough to guard Jokic one-on-one so that you can shut down everybody else.
Yes. I mean, well, you can't double Jokic no matter what, right?
Right. I mean, you can't do much. You have to figure out a way where you can limit Jokic and have him be inefficient and not score well. Yeah.
Rondo spoke to this on a podcast recently. He's like, the Lakers in 2020, I mean, Jokic has improved since then, but they had Dwight Howard, right? They had AD, even though Jokic cooked AD. But they had more bigs to throw at Jokic, so you didn't have to double him, then make him beat you. And then, yeah, like I think there's something there to that. But at the end of the day, Jokic has improved a lot since 2022.
Yeah, he has. So
and they didn't have Murray in that series, right? Like, he got hurt in the bubble, no?
I think that sounds right. Yeah. Well, yeah. Murray was awesome in the bubble. That was that year. But then he got hurt.
I think he got hurt in the bubble, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds familiar to me. So, yes. Yeah. Anyhow, you're right. So that's going to be an interesting question, is because, you know, the only guy I could think that really would do it would be like Embiid, right? Like, he's the guy that would probably be enough down there.
I don't know, man. I just see it being barbecue chicken anyway.
Yeah. And so there you are. And then you have to deal with, even if it's close, the Nuggets pull those games out. They nothing phases them, and they know how to execute and get the good shots they need. They can make defensive plays when they need them as well. Is Michael Porter Jr. going to get kicked out of the league?
No, but that's his brother. That's not Michael.
I know, but I feel like there's a little crossover into the brother, and there's some bets there too. Did I misread that? I thought I read something about that. Well,
you saw something I didn't know. So can you enlighten me?
I don't know. Maybe I was remembering that there was some of these bets were being, or some of these fantasy stuff was being put down on MPJ as well, but. And he needs to be careful. I'm sure they're scrutinizing him. I mean,
well, he's actually shooting great. So if he's betting on himself, which I doubt he is, it's on the other way. And
yeah.
His brother, which was, I don't know, kind of a soft move, betting on the under. It's not
a soft move if you want to win.
No, he was making himself play worse.
To win a lot of millions of dollars.
Yeah, but to lose games, like at least bet like Pete Rose bet on himself to win.
Right. Well, okay. But I'm just thinking that he probably feels like his 10, 11, 12 minutes a game doesn't affect, you know, the win or loss anyway. So listen, it's horrible what he did. If he really did do it, and if he did do it and they prove it, then he's going to be kicked out of the league and banned forever. Right. That's not even a question.
Yeah.
But I have to imagine in his mind, if he was on, you know, some contract, wasn't making a ton of money, he could, you know, not get a couple extra rebounds. Were you compelled by that video that was going around where he got too many rebounds really quickly and he was in danger of going over, so he got an eye injury that didn't.
I saw that.
Is that compelling to you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was to me. I guess I would prefer to go through the game and make sure I didn't notice him getting hit in the eye at all. The video said nothing got close to his eye, and that's probably.
It's compelling, but at the end of the day, you got to go through the due diligence of seeing how true this really is, right? Like, yes, to get it. Like, you're all innocent until proven guilty, right, in this country, no matter what. So we got to see.
We do. But, like, you know, the circumstantial things that we've seen so far have been, you know, there's something there.
Look at your legal jargon.
Yeah. Oh, I'm all about that. You know, I'm studying. Yeah, listen, I'm busy focusing on all these cases that are going on in the politics side. So you get to learn all sorts of stuff.
Okay.
All right, so we haven't gotten – where else have we got? So we haven't really talked too much about the Bucks. I turned them on yesterday, and within 10 seconds, I'm watching Brooke Lopez try and be a dribble drive artist. And I'm wondering, like, what the hell is going on? At this point of your season, your role players should be locked in and know exactly what they should be doing. And Brooke Lopez should not be dribbling and should not be trying to make passes to cutters. And you know, I was looking, he doesn't turn the ball over that many times, he's shooting fine, whatever, but like, is this that little microcosm kind of struck me And they're 15-17. They have, you know, they have a losing record with Doc, considering how much better they were with Adrian Griffin. Now, here's the other thing that's in the background of all this, because people rightfully so responded to that tweet I wrote about what it says about the Eastern Conference, is that all the other teams that would have leapfrogged the Bucks have had major injuries as well. So you have Embiid with the Sixers, who have really, like, you know, their record's horrible without him, and rightfully so. The Knicks have endured, you know, Randall. You know, we could talk about that for a second too, but Randall's been out. OG has been out. Randall's done. We talked about like how that all unfolded. And then the Cavs, you know, haven't had Donovan Mitchell. But so that makes, does that make sense to you that in theory, like, because everyone else got hit with the injury bug that would have leapfrogged them, that's why they've managed to survive in second place?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the way the East and the West are, right? I mean, the East is just not as good, and the West is better.
Right. But by the way, let's argue that then. If that's the case, and these other teams are severely banged up and couldn't catch them, well, why would the Bucks then still struggle so mightily when they did have Giannis and they did have for a lot of those games?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the defense hasn't been good this year. That's a big part of it, because their backcourt defensively isn't great. But I think they haven't figured out a way to maximize Dame and Giannis, especially in the sense, like, if I'm Doc Rivers, I'm featuring Dame, because Giannis is going to get his no matter what. And I'm going to try and get that Portland Trailblazers version of Dame and let Giannis work around that. I mean, there was times in the playoffs where Chris Middleton was the go-to guy at the end of games. So I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what's going on with Dame. When I watch Dame play, I mean, he still got it. He didn't fall off at all. He still could play at a high level. I mean, Giannis is in his prime. I just don't get – it's kind of, it feels weird to me that you could have those two guys and struggle so much.
Oh, I agree. You know, and so Dame's tends to struggle with shot selection at times, and he'll take a lot of tough threes off the dribble and all sorts of stuff. And
but he can make those. It's a new NBA.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I kind of want to look at Dame's stats right now off the dribble three right now. I'm curious, because his scoring is down. The lowest it's been per 36 since his third year in the league. And on this kind of team, it needed to go the other way. You know, the Bucks really need, especially when they had Middleton out, and they still have Middleton out, I think, you know, they needed him to be able to score what he was doing, you know, at his height. And that's not happening either. Let me just see if I can quickly do this while we're talking. Is it shooting? No, it's where is it? It's shot dashboard. I hate when they do all this. General, overall, pull-ups. Let's do so let's just quickly see if I can do this. Milwaukee Bucks. I'm kind of curious. If we call up Dame's off the dribble threes, it is this year he's shooting 36%, which is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
So that's not it either. I don't know. I'm gonna have to do a deep dive and really try and figure out what's going on. I mean, listen, Giannis. You want me to get in trouble, don't you? Is that why we're, I guess I brought it up, right?
Yeah. You tried to blame that on me, Coach Nick.
Well, I don't know if I want. Do we want to have a real talk about Giannis, or do we not want to have a real talk about Giannis?
Well, I mean, I thought we're always real, Coach Nick. What's going on?
Yeah. Well, you know, listen, Giannis he's got some limitations to his game, and
I mean, you could say that about other great players of the past, though. Like, you could say Shaq has limitations to his game, but he was still one of the most dominant players ever. And I'm not the biggest Giannis guy either, so just letting you know that.
Yeah. Okay. So Shaq in his prime, with his limitations, was he more dominant than Giannis is in his prime?
100%.
Okay.
Not even close.
But they share a free throw issue.
Yeah.
Although you can argue Giannis is better.
Actually, I think, you know, it's an interesting conversation. Who's the better passer? I think actually Shaq was.
You know, when Shaq played in the triangle, he actually was underrated. There were a lot of great moments when they would double hit the cutter. He was great.
Yeah. But I guess Giannis is passing more from the perimeter, and Shaq was passing more from the post. Yeah, it's just different.
Yeah. You know, I mean, was Shaq throwing like skip passes to the corner for threes? Like,
right. Not really. Yeah. Giannis does surprise me with that once in a while.
Yeah. So that's different. It's different. And, you know, could Shaq have done it? Yeah. Shaq in his prime in Orlando could have probably been a little bit more like Giannis. He could, we saw a little bit of him bringing the ball up. He could handle the ball. Yeah. They just, nobody let him. So,
yeah. I mean, Shaq never had the handle Giannis had either. Giannis got an underrated handle.
I bet you, and you know, toward the end, as Shaq got bigger and slower, like, that's not a thing. But like, when Shaq was young, I bet you he could have run.
Well, with the right skill development, not with his skill set that he actually had.
But we saw enough of it where it wouldn't have been that much. If they said, hey, we start grabbing those boards and push it up, I think within, you know, a month, he would have been able to do it.
I mean, just Giannis was a little bit shiftier in transition always, even young Giannis. Like, I remember watching Giannis Young live. Like, he was like, he could change direction really well.
Now, because now it just feels like he's one direction in Euro, you know, and that's his way he's going to do it, which, by the way, it works very, very well.
And he has a knack for it until they start walling up and he just wants to go through it.
I guess the only issue I have with Giannis is I would like to have seen some of the skill deficits that he has, you know, developed better. The shooting, you know, even like mid-range shooting, you know, a little better. Because, you know, the way you guard him now is, you know, with giving him so much space, it can get into his head. And it can bog some stuff down. And I could see why, you know, if Dame is trying to run pick and rolls with Giannis, it's a little bit harder because Giannis is not a magnet out there. And it puts more pressure on Dame. Mm-hmm. You know, when Dame was running pick and roll with like Aldridge, right, who was a real threat from 20 feet, that changes the dynamic of everything. So, but I'm going to need to go through a little bit more with that and see if there's other subtle stuff that's happening in their offense. Cause you know, their defense is like 13th, which is mediocre. Their offense is lower than that under Doc. And it's worth looking at. Cause yeah, you shouldn't have an out of the top 10 offensive rating when you have Giannis and Dame on the same team playing most of the games.
I totally agree. And I just always like this team for that fact that they're going to have these two guys who are proven playoff performers who won't fold in the playoffs. And I feel like, you know, the Bucks are like that. I also feel like the Mavs are like that on the West. Like, you mm-hmm. know, those two guys are not going to fold in the playoffs. So I think both those teams are really dangerous and have a high ceiling in the playoffs, even though the Mavs have been hot and the Bucks have been cold.
Right. And don't forget, if you want your question asked on the show, we'll put up on screen. If you do the super chats, the way to go on YouTube side. But let's talk about what else we want to talk about. Okay. You know, Bronny, I did the video on Bronny. If you want to see it already, he simultaneously declares for the draft, NBA draft, and is transferring. You know, Enfield is leaving USC and they're going to hire Musselman.
All we know is he won't be going to USC. He could be anywhere else in the world.
Right. So I kind of think that, here's the thing. Is there a version of the Matrix where some NBA teams work him out, and in those workouts, a la like a Kobe when he was working out of high school, he was so impressive in those workouts that they actually wanted to draft him somewhere in the late first round or early second?
I mean, there is a school of thought, and Kendrick Perkins talked about this. I never really thought about it in this way, that, you know, his game is more fit for the NBA. I don't know. I would say that, like, watching Bronny play as a younger player, I always thought he'd become an NBA level player just because of how athletic he was. He shoots the ball well, he defends, he plays tough. And then I thought he was going to grow too, because his dad was LeBron. And then on top of it, his dad is LeBron, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like that he will become an NBA level player. He's just not an NBA level player right now. So it'll be interesting to see. How do you feel about that? That, you know, does his game translate better to the NBA level than it does in college? You watched him play live in college. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, well, when I went to the UCLA-USC game, like, he had – so remember, in the video you'll see it, but I talk about him playing against or behind Boogie Ellis, who is a fifth-year senior, very, very good, but a ball-dominant guard, and there's just not going to be a lot of opportunities for a freshman guard coming in who almost died with a heart problem and, like, missed the first 2 months of the season. So that's why I feel like, you know, he probably would be better off coming back for one more year to really get his feet underneath him, have a full, you know, a preseason of training and fitting in. But what I did see was an ISO turnaround fadeaway 14 footer over his defender and went right in the basket. Those are the kind of indications you're like, well, you know, yeah, is this more suited for an NBA? And to me, it's like suited for the NBA means when coaches allow your players to have the freedom to do what they do best versus college, which is very limiting a lot of the time. Well, and that's what they mean when they want to, they're like there to win, and winning to them means limiting your players to very myopic and very specific little things that they can do, even if they have more skills.
It feels like they red light and green light players in college, and in the NBA, they just get players that fill certain skill sets that naturally play the role player style of play around the stars, if that makes sense. I know that sounds a little bit convoluted, but I think you see where I'm going.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a control issue there that the college coaches feel that they have, that don't want to risk giving up control, and that in their minds that thinks that that's their best way of winning. When to me, it's like you're there to, you should be there to develop your players' individual skills as well. And then the more skills they have, the better chance you have of winning. It's a very strange thing when you hear a lot of coaches, and they all seem to agree, oh, I'm not here to develop them for the NBA. I'm here to win games. Those two things should be the same. And it makes no sense to me why you would. And by the way, if you want buy-in, then the players need to believe that you're there to help them get better. So at any rate, we have a super chat. Let's get to Dave. Oh, come back here. Dave Wu, thank you so much, Dave.
$330. Thank you.
Yeah, it's he's from Taiwan. Hello from Taiwan. So Taiwan is the, oh my goodness, the currency in Taiwan is an NT. What is the currency in Taiwan? It's not the yen.
It's a good question though.
I mean, we're the ugly Americans who don't know the new Taiwan dollar. Okay, so it's a dollar. Interesting. So thank you so much. We don't know how much that is, but it seems like a lot. So thank you.
Right. Yeah.
Here's Dave's question. Just had an earthquake of a Richter scale of 7.2 last week. That's right. You saw some buildings that were just literally falling over. It was, I hope you're okay. And you'll get through it. Okay. And it was pretty brutal. Also, thoughts on Jalen Williams and Chet's game, any points of improvement? I mean, I love Jalen Williams' game. And the best part about it is that he's not intimidated. He just is no nonsense. He's going to take you. He's going to score. Nothing pretty, nothing too fancy. I don't know if he has a lot to work on, right? Like, do you think that Jalen has anything, any holes?
Nah, he really doesn't have any holes in his game. He can get his shot off when he wants. He plays hard on defense. He's a three-level scorer. He's efficient. He plays tough, as you spoke to. He can play off the ball. I think, like, there's some superstar potential there, to be honest.
Yeah. And
I think he doesn't play like James Harden, but I think eventually it gets to a situation where he's going to leave that team and become a superstar somewhere else.
Oh, yeah. Or is his makeup such that he wants to stay together with his team, realizing that imagine what that OKC could have been if they didn't have players that had that mindset, right?
Okay, yeah. Learn from history. That makes sense. Yeah,
that might be something there. And then, ironically, it's in OKC again.
Yeah. But with Chet, yeah. Go ahead. What were you saying?
You know, so OKC built a team that had, you know, multiple MVPs players ultimately, and, you know, really had something. They could have kept it together another couple of years, and they're doing it again. And we'll have to find out if Chet and these guys want to stay together. Jalen, you know, it's funny. He plays bigger than 6'5", in my mind. I thought he was like 6'8". I looked it up. He's like 6'5".
If he was 6'8", he'd be a All NBA this year.
Yeah. You know, and like, so the post up obviously is another area where he can, and by the way, if he's playing at 6'5" and he's going to get a shooting guard on him, then please, you take those little guys into the post. You know, that would be something he could develop as well. Whether or not the offense, you know, it's hard for that offense. They like to play a lot of five out. I'm just looking at his synergy breakout here. Yeah. He does not post up at all. So, but other than
that, yeah. I think that's to like the whole point. The reason why Chet, and we could segue to Chet, why Chet has been so great for this team. Obviously, the rim protection, that was a hole for them. But then at the five, he creates space for SGA, who's more of their post player. So I don't think they need Jalen posting at this point because SGA does everything. He's a three-level scorer and he posts. And I think that spacing that Chet allows and all their shooting around them, Giddy's their only clogger, really. Like, he's not going to space it too well because he's not a great shooter. But I don't know if they need Jalen posting at this point because of the spacing that it creates for SGA.
I hear you. But we're just talking about individual and, you know, what he's going to develop. That would be one thing I'd like to see. You're right. SGA does get some post-ups. I should go through those more and analyze that. SGA is just an MVP. That's what he is. Yeah. I know you got to leave in a minute, right?
Yes. All right. I got till 35.
Okay, great. We got like maybe, all right, let's call it 6 minutes. Alan Tran, thank you so much for the best friend of the breakdown out there. Alan, great to see you. I don't envy Bronny. No matter what he does, he'll forever be trapped in his dad's shadow. His perceptions among fans will never be more than son. And that's it, very spot on, exactly. You know, that's a tough shadow to come out of, which is probably why other players have not been able to replicate their father's success.
Yeah, I think could be different with Bronny if he becomes really, really good over time, you know?
Yeah.
with Marcus, like Jordan's son, he didn't seem like he had the love and passion for the game.
Right.
And I think Bronny seems to. So we'll see. I mean, you know, there's been other sons that have stepped away from the shadow, like Ken Griffey Jr., right? Even though he played with his dad, which was phenomenal.
Yeah. So, no, yeah. That's true. And different. I mean, that's interesting because baseball is a little bit different too. But I will say this. I don't think Bronny's got that killer mentality. And I don't think he's got that personality, which means he could be a really nice NBA player and it blends in. I'm trying to think of like, you know, what would his comp be? What would Bronny's comp be?
Drew Holiday.
Drew Holiday. Maybe I'll, you know, Drew is quicker than.
Well, he was just more talented out of college. I mean, that's a whole other subject, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny because Bronny explosive to you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he does East Bay dunks in games.
Like, we've seen a little bit of that explosiveness. Yeah. There's a difference. There's a quick twitch that Drew kind of has. I don't think that Bronny moves that way, but he definitely has. I've seen him play with that kind of ferocity defensively. So, yeah, maybe I think maybe Drew Holiday is probably the best call there, you know, for a ceiling for him.
Why do you think do you think he has like a Cam Reddish type mentality towards the game? Like, he's athletic, he plays hard, but just the demeanor isn't aggressive.
Okay, so let's put Cam Reddish on one end, and then we'll put Drew Holiday on the other, and that's where he could be somewhere in between. Okay, but I could kind of see that, I guess, because Cam Reddish is not a I had high hopes.
Cam Reddish is also Cam Reddish is also a lot taller too.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. He is. I kind of felt, and you know what? It's not too late. You know, like Malik Monk has been winding around and sort of slowly finding a way in that same realm. Maybe Cam Reddish can find, you know, a way, but I doesn't feel like he's the kind of guy that would excel on the Lakers having to play alongside LeBron. He's not that guy that fits that well, offensively at least. But it's interesting.
I mean, he's supposed to be 3-and-D, so I don't see why not.
Cam Reddish?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like at his best when we saw him in that little stint in Atlanta.
He can play on the ball. He can play on the ball a little bit, right?
Yeah, he really was able to be have a lot of force with the ball. And, like, you know, he's just not going to – you're going to get, like, a couple of those opportunities every game or, you know, around there. So, but even still, you know, can Cam Reddish give them some sort of random lift in a playoff game that they're going to need? Like, yeah, maybe, you know, he could come in there, give them, like, a 10 points in, you know, in 8 minutes real quick, change the course of one of those playoff games. Yeah, that could happen. Do we finish actually wrapping up with the notion of like the matchups we can do maybe the next show, although by the time we have the next show is playoffs are almost going to start, but we could do that for the next one. But
yeah, the live show is going to be fun during the playoffs.
Yeah. But I mean, we're going to have, and what's interesting now is how the Nuggets and the Timberwolves are now battling for the first spot, because that affects everybody down low and that who are all bunched up, who want to probably get the seventh spot and not the eighth.
Right.
You know, like, but the Warriors are pretty much, they're guaranteed if they're going to make it, they're going to have the eighth spot. They're locked into the 10th. So I mean, do we feel like the Lakers are going to leapfrog over the Kings, Pelicans, and Suns?
No.
But they can leapfrog over the Kings, right?
Mm-hmm. I
think so. They could be eighth and wouldn't play the Warriors then. So you'd have the Kings and the Warriors in a rematch of last year's playoffs a little bit.
How many games are there left?
What?
How many games are there left?
Five.
Okay.
Four.
Mm-hmm.
Four games. And, you know, there's not a lot of movement with four games left. You know, you're not going to catch – if someone's two games ahead of you with four games left, you're not catching them. This is not happening.
Right.
But, you know, the Lakers are only a half game right now behind the Kings, so they could do that, and they're playing well. Rest from the breakdown, Bron's a super chat real quick. Quick thoughts on Caitlin Clark at the next level. This whole thing, did you see the comments from Taurasi?
Oh, yeah, like she's going to learn quick or something?
Yeah, that it's going to be, it's a whole different game. You're not playing against 18-year-olds. And, you know, I don't think that Caitlin Clark's playing against 18-year-olds that much either right now in women's basketball. So I think there's no reason that there's nothing that has given me any indication that Caitlin Clark will be nothing less than awesome at the WNBA right away.
Yeah, I think there's going to be people that are going to try and not let her be great in the beginning, but greatness always becomes great over time.
Yeah, and then Lynette Woodard also wanted to say, like, you know, she had to issue a statement to sort of apologize, but she said some stuff about how she doesn't feel like Caitlin Clark broke her scoring record because when she played, it was the full-size ball.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, I mean, listen, it was like, why are you going there? There's nothing to be gained from being that way. And we see the old heads, you know, in the NBA doing it too for the younger guys and criticizing or whatever. It's really frustrating. It makes this whole thing ridiculously toxic. But bottom line is for me, Caitlin Clark, I feel like she comes in and can score. She'll score 18 a game, you know, hit a lot of, you know, off the dribble threes like she does now, and then go on from there and continue being great. I don't see her being anything less than really good to start and then great later on.
So you think she'll be more Steph Curry than Jimmer Fredette?
Yeah. Right. Which is actually a good point, right? Jimmer Fredette was very similar to Caitlin Clark. And then they wouldn't let Jimmer Fredette be Jimmer Fredette. He came in a couple of years too early to the league.
Yeah.
Had Jimmer come in 4 years later, I think he probably could have found some more of those Jimmer Fredette, you know, freedom.
Yeah. And if that's the polar opposites, I mean, Trae Young is the guy closer to Steph, but further away from Jimmer, right? If like in the middle of those two.
Yeah.
Impact. Yeah. You know,
right. And that's the point, that proves the point. Trae Young comes in and gets to be Trae Young. Yeah. And he's always doing all he can do. He's an all-star, all those different things.
Exactly.
And you know, Jimmer from the beginning, and by the way, that's Mike Malone, you know, who's a terrific coach with the, when he was with the Kings. I know that they were sort of frustrated that he wouldn't just play like the Steve Kerr role. And I know that I think Jimmer was
frustrated he doesn't have more. He doesn't have feel for the game like you said Steve Nash or Steve Kerr?
Steve Kerr.
Oh, Steve. Yeah, but the NBA was changing at that point already, right? Like,
kind of.
Was there a Steve Kerr type player at that time?
Yeah, I mean, there were guys catch and shoot guys, like, you know, the Corvers and all those guys. And
usually those guys could defend a little bit better.
Right. Than and the funny thing is, Jimmer is more, his rhythm is more like
Kyle Korver 6'9", too.
Yeah. What?
Kyle Korver's like 6'9", too. It's a big difference.
True. Yeah. Yeah. And so he was shorter for that anyway. If he could have gotten onto a team that was running more of the D'Antoni system, I think he could have found a lot of success in that doing that, honestly. But they wouldn't let him. He didn't want to do the other thing. And here we are. You got to go. Great show. I think, you know, I think we covered all the super chats and some really good stuff.
All right. Yeah. So I'm about to go into this eclipse right now.
Okay. Good luck. Hopefully I was at the airport and before I got here, that's why I was late. Some lady who, you know, I don't want to judge a book by its cover, but I'll just, here's her question. She shows to the pilot who's waiting to get on the plane. Do you think that, what's the effect of the eclipse going to have on us when we're at 30,000 feet? And the pilot looked at her and goes, nothing, unless the pilot looks into the sun. I was like, okay, good. But there are people out there that kind of think that these eclipses do things and cause interesting problems. And that's unfortunate that they feel that way. But listen, I went to St. Louis to see the eclipse a few years ago, the full eclipse.
You know,
especially to see it. And that was crazy.
You know what this tells me? That people don't have real problems if they feel this is a problem.
Yeah, or they're influenced by a lot of things. But that's probably more for my political podcast, which I'll be recording later on today, and it'll be released tomorrow. If you want to,
if you have an eclipse conversation, I will tune into your political podcast.
Okay, well, I'll make sure. Well, I'll put it into the rundown, yes. And that's the Muckrake podcast. If you want to go around and find that, and feel
are
free.
Are you guys on YouTube too?
Yeah, I post the Tuesday show on YouTube as well.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. So anyhow,
I want to hear the eclipse episode. Okay.
All right. We'll see if we get into it. I think we talked about it the last one too, but we'll see if we can find some more. Because, well, by the way, you should listen to the last episode because we did go into that about all the different conspiracies around the eclipse. Mm-hmm. So that's the one you want to dig into. It's already recorded. I'll send you the link.
Okay.
Anyway, awesome stuff. Thank you guys for being here. Great conversation. We'll be back again on Monday, next Monday, probably even earlier around 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. And other than that, please be safe. Stay away from any of those earthquakes out there and any other kind of huge things that happen to people that, you know, stay safe. Anyway, thank you, Combo. And I know you got to go. We got to go, and we'll be back. So don't forget, sports fans, at P-Ball Breakdown, we're not a channel. We're a conversation. You in? Are you in, Combo?
Yes, sir.